Climate Change, a weekly report on issues relating to the environment and sustainability in Russia.
Welcome to Climate Change. My name is John Harrison. Today we're going to talk about German-controlled E.ON's major breakthrough in winning contracts in Surgutskaya power station in the Ханты-Мансийск Autonomous District, which is a large area of Russia, more or less in the middle of the country, and also in the Явинская station in the Perm region. In the studio to talk about what exactly E.ON will be doing at these two locations is Sergei Tazin, Chairman of Director on the Board of E.ON Russia. Good evening, Sergei. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Could you please give us listeners a brief description of what E.ON is doing in Russia?
E.ON is the biggest German investor in Russian Federation and also the biggest foreign strategic investor in Russia's electric power sector. Overall, E.ON, besides a wholesale generating company, which is called right now E.ON Russia, also is a partner in Yuzhno-Russkoye gas field and a partner in Nord Stream. But the main activities are, of course, concentrated in the electric power sector. E.ON currently owns the largest wholesale generating company. In the past, it used to be called the wholesale generating company number 4. Now it's E.ON Russia. Installed capacity, 10,345 megawatts. As I mentioned previously, that E.ON is the largest investor in Russia, and a German investor. So far, we have invested into Russia's electric power sector, 4.7 billion euros. And by the end of 2014, when we complete our all investment program, the total investment will go up to 5.7 billion euros.
I understand that you're investing into Russia's electric grid, but what exactly do you mean by that, investing? I mean, you're buying and replacing equipment, you're building new power stations. Okay. Exactly, does it mean?
It's not the grid, it's a power generation. Mm-hmm. Basically, in 2010, during a privatization of power generation assets, E.ON acquired at the tender assets of wholesale generating company number 4. That time, the installed capacity was 8,600 megawatts. Mm-hmm. And we had certain investment obligations, so we basically bought 78% of the company. Mm-hmm. And also, under the framework agreement, we have to build additional 2,400 megawatts of additional capacity. So far in 2010 and 2011, we already commissioned 1,600 megawatts of new capacity. Primarily, it's in a combined cycle, new technology, based on a new technology units. And currently, we're also building another 800 megawatt block coal-fired at our power plant in Krasnoyarsk. We operate in five regions of Russia. Mm-hmm. In Krasnoyarsk region, then Ханты-Мансийск, which you mentioned, Явинская ГРЭС is located in Urals. Шатурская power plant is located in Moscow region, and Смоленская power plant is located in Smolensk region. And our Surgutskaya power plant is, after we commissioned two additional units of combined capacity for 800 megawatts, it became the largest gas-fired power plant in the world, with installed capacity 5,600 megawatts.
Right. So you're called in to upgrade, if you like, existing Russian facilities. You're not building new electric power stations from scratch. You're updating existing power stations.
It's not updating. It's basically expanding existing power facilities, but we're building at existing sites. New units. It's a brand new unit. It's like a greenfield, but it's called an expansion of the existing power plants.
Right. Yes. So in this particular case, you're installing combined cycle gas turbines. Now, I did a little bit of homework, and very basically, correct me if I'm wrong, a combined cycle gas turbine is a turbine that's using the exhaust heat from one of the turbines to heat up a second turbine, therefore cutting down energy use. Is that correct?
That is correct. Combined cycle, it's a relatively new technology, although it was developed in the 90s, and actually a lot of projects going on in the world with combined cycle technology. For Russia, it's rather new. They had only two big power plants installed or commissioned so far. And also, in our case, we're using the most updated technology, which is called the F technology, which is more efficient. And the first power plant that we built, power unit in Shatura, use this F technology. That was the first large heavy-duty combined cycle unit in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Now the combined cycle, what's called combined cycle, basically you have a gas turbine. Gas turbine, that's a turbine that's basically it's an internal combustion engine which uses gas.
Right.
And the exhaust is not going to the atmosphere, which is also the case in a simple cycle units, but it's fed in a special so-called steam generator, which produces steam for the steam turbine.
Yeah.
There's a gas turbine, which also produces electricity, and exhaust from this gas turbine is being fed to heat recovery steam generator.
Right.
Then steam goes into the steam turbine, and steam turbine also generates electric power. So instead of letting this exhaust gases at high temperature into the atmosphere, it's like in your car, when you fire your car, your exhaust pipe emits gases and they're hot. So instead of feeding it into the atmosphere, you're feeding this in the steam generator and produce, so you use this energy from the exhaust heat.
And hence the interest in your company by the program Climate Change, because we understand that in doing this, you're saving a lot of exhaust gases, which could have gone into the atmosphere firstly, and secondly, you're saving presumably power. Because the secondary producing, energy producing facility will need less energy.
That's right.
Who designs these turbines? Do you design them, or are they on the market and they call you in because of your expertise?
There are several manufacturers who produce this type of equipment. I would call it high-tech because they use in gas turbines in the first stage high-temperature alloys. And this equipment is designed by U.S., German companies, Japan. Russia is also producing gas turbines, but not as so-called efficient or not at the larger scale as companies that work abroad. So we use both U.S. equipment, like in our two power plants in Shaturskaya and Surgutskaya power plant number two. We've been using American equipment. In Yavinskaya, we use the German equipment.
So why E.ON? I mean, what have you got to offer that other companies haven't in Russia?
E.ON, it's one of the companies that owns generating facilities in Russia. There are Russian also owners of other generating facilities, Italians, Finnish company owned. It's not specific that we are the sole proprietor or we're the only ones that know that technology. But nevertheless, E.ON has experience in developing and building those projects in Europe, primarily in Germany, United Kingdom, Scandinavia. Therefore, we have a pretty extended, expansive experience in building, and not only building, but also operating this type of facilities.
Okay, thank you. Let's take a break here.
Climate Change. A weekly report on issues relating to the environment and sustainability in Russia.
My name is John Harrison. Today we're talking about German energy company E.ON's work in Russia on energy-saving projects approved under the Kyoto Protocol. In the studio to talk about this, I'm honoured to have Sergei Tazin, Chairman and Director of the Board of E.ON in Russia, as my guest. Sergei, how much money is involved in these projects? How many millions of dollars are we talking about?
PERM, for example, is a combined cycle, a unit of installed capacity 400 megawatts. It costs us 16 billion rubles, which is roughly $600 million.
Right.
And that's a total cost, development cost, construction cost, and also a grid connection cost as well.
Over what period of time?
Particularly in Yavinskaya power plant, we started this project in the spring of 2008 and completed that project in August of 2011, slightly above a three-year period.
Financing is a very interesting subject, isn't it? I mean, financing is abstract and it can be very concrete. I understand in this case that the financing is provided under the Kyoto Agreement, whereas the Russian side theoretically can score back that investment by trading their emissions, which they save on the international market. Can you tell us please, how this actually works in practice.
That was investment came from E.ON for the power plant because it's a rather large investment. Mm. And E.ON invested in this mine, also raised the capital for E.ON Russia through its own sources. Then when this project was completed and Russia announced, basic called for the tender that projects which will pass certain requirements can be eligible to get so-called emission reduction units, which can be traded as a part of the Kyoto Agreement. Therefore, we have to pass a special requirements, and then Sberbank, it's a bank which is owned by the Russian state, they went for the, so, but they were conducting the approval process. Also, our projects was verified by Bureau Veritas, and then Minister of Economic Development gave the final approval for these projects. Then those units that were will be traded, and they traded through the E.ON carbon sourcing, that will be traded in Europe. Basically, the money that we received will go back to us. So this investment which we...
Go back to you.
That's right, yes. We eligible to trade those emission or CO2 credits on in European markets and receive money for those emission reduction units.
But who pays you to install the equipment in the first place? And
to install the equipment, basically, it's E.ON, our company. We pay this money. Then also, part of the project was also financed through our own cash flow.
So it's not that a case where the Russian power station is your client.
And
the power station pays you. It's you yourself are the investors.
Yes, that's right. We're investors. We own those assets. We invest this money. And also, we trade those emission reduction units and receive money from the market in Europe.
How many such projects have you got going in Russia at the moment under the aegis of the Kyoto?
Well, first of all, investment program was launched relatively to this Kyoto Protocol. Then basically any company, if they have a project which eligible for Kyoto, can go through the approval process and receive those so-called units to be traded. Our projects, why they received the approval also from the United Nations, Russian government, because in a so-called conventional power plant, the efficiency is roughly 35, maybe 40% in some cases. Our efficiency increased to 55, 56%. Therefore, this is a rather substantial increase in efficiency, reduces, of course, the pollution, reduces the emissions. Basically, now in per kilowatt hour of produced electricity, you use less fuel and less emissions. Therefore, our projects became eligible. Three of our projects became eligible and already approved by the Sberbank, which is a Russian bank, which authorized by the Russian government to authorize this project, and Minister of Economic Development. Before it's a Shaturskaya power plant, which was commissioned in 2010, and two power plants at Surgutskaya number 2 and Yavinskaya power plant. So overall, at three projects. Installed capacity of the three projects, 1,600 megawatts. It's rather a substantial investment program.
As you know, Russia at the Rio de Janeiro conference has decided not to be a signatory to the continuing program, to continue at stage two of the Kyoto Agreement, meaning that such emission trading schemes, which Russia is a part of, will now phase out over the next year. How do you feel about that as a company that's heavily involved in Russia now?
Of course, taking our track record that we invest money into not only improving into efficient power generation, and also there was an opportunity to recuperate some of this investment through this emission reduction units. We think that Russia should have been stated and will continue with the Kyoto Protocol. As you mentioned, that Kyoto Protocol, the first stage ends in by the end of 2012. And Russian Federations at this time, they refused to continue participation in Kyoto. That was done also by some other countries as well. And recently, some business community, they had a session discussing the consequences. And Russia has a potential of 6 billion additional units that could have been traded on the European and other markets where the CO2 is being traded. Therefore, that cost, which those 6 billion and the market price would be almost 30 billion euros. So this money would not come to companies that are investing into Russia and Russian industry, especially that using the so-called equipment that reduces the emissions.
Also, and some of those companies are Russian as well. They're not all foreign companies.
That's right. Also, many Russian companies, metallurgical companies, oil and gas companies, they're also participating in this kind of projects. Therefore, unfortunately, Russia took this decision, and we think Russia should have stayed in with this Kyoto framework further.
Okay, this is very interesting, but let's take a short break here.
Climate change.
Welcome back to Climate Change. My name is John Harrison. Today we're talking about the very interesting situation with swapping emission units under the Kyoto Protocol. And I have in the studio at this present time Sergei Tazin, the Chairman of Directors Board of E.ON in Russia. Just this week, we've heard the news that energy prices for the consumer are going to be fixed, at least up until March, and the elections are held in Russia for the president of the Russian Federation. Do you think that it's a good thing or a bad thing that energy prices for the consumer should be held back, because they are being held back in Russia in relation to the actual cost of energy?
We understand the concern of the Russian government that the electricity prices for the end user, especially for the residential consumers, rising rather quickly, and there are certain so-called reasons for this. When we talk about electricity cost structure to the end user, it consists of generation, transmission, distribution, and some supply surcharge. Russia, as you're aware, that deregulated its power generation industry, and there is a wholesale market for the capacity and energy. And wholesale market in Russia functions rather, it's a competitive market and has one of the lowest electricity prices in the world. It's roughly wholesale price, including the capacity, it's no more than 3 cents a kilowatt hour. It's a very competitive pricing. Then when it comes to transmission, distribution, and supply, that's where the prices are rising, and there are certain losses which should be addressed, especially.
I know what you're talking about, because I actually get a bill from your company in my flat in Scotland for electricity prices.
Okay.
And I did a comparison. It actually works out at 500% more expensive.
Therefore, we see that as an investor, we see that Russian market as a wholesale generation electricity industry for us is attractive, and E.ON made a strategic decision, well thought through decision, that we'll be investing into Russia. And the problems are what they exist in everywhere, because in electricity, especially in markets, there is no so-called readily available scenario how it should work, because it's a relatively new type of markets, and electricity has its own peculiarities. Therefore, we see what kind of risks we have in Russia, what kind of risks we have in other countries we operate, and so far we have been rather successful. The decision that has been taken by the government in order to curtail the further price rises for energy and consumers. Of course, it's they're addressing the concerns that the cost of the power, cost of the heat and hot water is going up almost every year. Of course, it cannot continue indefinitely. That's why government addressed, and we see this.
Well, it seems to be going up indefinitely in the UK, for example.
Yes, and I think it's a right approach that the government addresses the concerns of this its citizens. It's correct. Now the question how it will be resolved this issue, and we'd like to see that the resolution will be taken not just further so-called control of the wholesale energy market, but other components of cost structure should be addressed equally.
I suppose then, but your costs are lower here. I mean, labor costs are lower here.
It's some kind of, recently we've done the comparison of especially labor cost, and labor cost in power generation, it's not the so-called the biggest concern, because the biggest concern is the fuel cost in every, it's either US, UK, Germany, and Russia. The fuel cost, it's the biggest cost item in any
and the fuel costs
company.
Are going up in Russia.
The fuel costs, they are going up, but they're still very low compared to Europe. Especially natural gas, coal, other fuel, oil, it's still really low. Therefore, The labor costs in Russia, I wouldn't say they're very low. Like we compare them with the German costs, they're somehow low, but not low. For example, in Surgut, it's Khantamysinsk region, there are a lot of oil companies operating there, of course, and we have to compete for the labor and skilled labor with oil and gas companies. Yeah. Therefore, we should pay adequate amount of money to our employees. Therefore, I wouldn't say that those labor costs are much lower. But other, like cost structure, fuel, yes, it's definitely lower than in Europe. And therefore, the prices, of course, the wholesale price reflects that why it's lower.
The climate change people, you know, the activists and the green people here in Moscow, as you know, actually would like to see more expensive electricity prices, because that will encourage people to economize on their consumption. I see that this theory is contrary to your common politics. So I think you're trying to produce more energy cheaply so that there's more available for the consumers, whereas the Greens are saying, okay, let's make energy more expensive so that you don't use so much.
In my opinion, we should produce more energy at an adequate price. Adequate price should be for the company that produces electricity. It has to make a return to its investors. It has to make money, invest in developing further power generation facilities. Yeah. And also should be adequate for the consumer. It should be overpriced to underpriced. Underpriced, of course, promotes so-called usage without considering any savings. And overpriced, of course, curtails some development of the industry, especially, or smaller business. Price should be adequate. Of course, when you artificially try to suppress the pricing, which you're not sending the right signals to the consumers to save energy, this is not correct, and we are not supporting this. But otherwise, we support the so-called the right pricing mechanism, that investors should be happy that they can make money, they can make energy in the future more efficiently, they can invest this money to providing reliable and efficient supply, and consumers should be also be comfortable that the energy, if it's very expensive, then they should also consider invest money into being more efficient, and that also works.
And I guess the major point, though, really is that your new combined cycle gas turbines have the potential to slash greenhouse gas emissions by a huge amount. I mean, I read that the two stations that you're working on in Yarinskaya could, correct me if I'm wrong, reduce emissions by 3.3 million tons.
That's true. That
in 2012.
Yes. Just in 2012, our Surgutskaya and Yavinskaya will reduce the emissions of just the CO2 by 3.3 million tons. Overall, including Shaturskaya, we reduce emissions by 4 million tons emissions for just CO2. So that's within that limited framework, it's rather substantial so-called reduction of emission. Also, besides CO2, we reduce nitrogen oxide emissions as well, which are also detrimental to the health of the people.
So if I sign up to E.ON in Russia, if there is ever such a time when I'll be able to choose which power supplier I want to use in my home here in Moscow, I don't need to feel guilty about turning on an electric fire then in the winter, because I know that the energy is fairly green.
That's right.
Okay. What about the timescale? You're looking at investments in Russia. How many years do you look at it? Do you look at it as a 5-year, a 10-year, a 15-year cycle? I mean, you make the investment, and when you actually get your money back?
Investments in electric power sector in any country, so those are long-term investments.
How many years?
And it's rather conservative. As I said, we're a strategic investment. We're looking for the longer term, like our plans right now. We're working out on financial models 2030, but on this particular investments, it's the model is and government allocated 15-year return period.
15-year return period, yes. Yeah. Well, let's hope the Russian government, not within 15 years, but within 15 months, will change its mind about the Kyoto Protocol, and you will get more business here in Russia, because obviously you're doing a lot of good. And I hope that everything goes well for you in Russia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. And my guest on today's program was Sergei Tazin, the chairman of the directors of E.ON Russia. And we've been having a discussion about using Western technology to help reduce emissions in Russia under provisions of the Kyoto Protocol. I'd like to remind you that all of our programs can be listened to on the archive section of the Voice of Russia website, www.ruvr.ru. I look forward to being with you again next week. Thank you very much.
Climate Change, a weekly report on issues relating to the environment and sustainability in Russia.